Hello and welcome to M&A on Trial, which is a podcast about those bits of M&A deals which, dare I say it, go wrong.
Each week we'll be discussing what happens in real life when those words negotiated late into the night end up in dispute.
We are your hosts, Harriet Martin, Senior Associate at Clifford Chance, specialising in M&A.
And Sachin Tricker, I'm a partner at Clifford Chance, specialising in arbitration and post-M&A disputes.
We're going to keep it simple, have some fun, and hopefully give a fresh perspective for those of you, legal or business side, doing English law M&A deals across the globe. So, Sachin, this is our fifth and final episode of M&A on Trial.
Almost feel quite sad, Harry.
I know, me too. Maybe there'll be some bonus episodes, but anyway, let's just try and get through this one. We have called this episode Resolution Confusion. And I suppose really what we're wanting to draw out here is, you know, you're in a deal and you're trying to agree all of your commercial aspects, and actually sometimes perhaps the method of resolution feels like a low priority item, but actually, you know, there can be a lot of things to think about. And I really just want to draw that out in this podcast. And I think I would definitely say I've seen increasingly SPAs and joint ventures moving towards arbitration and less courts, mm-hmm. particularly on cross-border deals.
Yeah.
Could you maybe explain a bit why that might be the case?
Yeah. I mean, I think that international element really is the crucial factor. And why is that? It really is the neutrality, I think, that comes along with an international arbitration. So if you have a party from one country, you know, signing an SPA with a counterparty from a different country, you know, each party may not necessarily want to go before the courts of each of their jurisdictions. That for one reason or another, they may just feel that that's you know, not quite what they want to do.
Yeah, and then somewhere the other party might have an advantage. Yeah, I see that.
Exactly. Subconsciously or otherwise, it's going to their territory. And they would much prefer to have any dispute resolved by a panel of three arbitrators sitting in a neutral country. You know, perhaps they could nominate their own arbitrators, and the two arbitrators can nominate the third, and you've got a completely independent, neutral tribunal from people all over the world sitting in a neutral country, and that just gives it, you know, additional dimension when you're talking about an international venture. I think neutrality is really the key factor. I mean, there are others as well. Enforceability of your award, you know, the New York Convention, which is, some say, the most successful international treaty ever, gives your award enormous currency. You can just take it to a jurisdiction that's a signatory to the New York Convention and pretty easily enforce that decision, get your money. It's sometimes harder with a court judgment, right? Because you're looking at that international comity between two countries. You know, you can get to a situation where a judgment from a high court judge is given no or very little weight in another country. So enforceability, neutrality, and if I'm permitted to add a third, there is a sense that in arbitration you have a bit more autonomy around the process, right, in terms of the timescales, in terms of what you're able to agree with the counterparty and fundamentally the decision maker. Right, you have a bit more say on who decides your dispute, because there is the opportunity for you to nominate your own arbitrator, and that for a party that's going to the dispute is a big deal. Right, is a big deal. They would look to find someone perhaps who understands their business culture, you know, in the jurisdiction in which they're based, understands whether they have, you know, a level of bureaucracy or hierarchy, or just understand why they sent that letter or they didn't escalate that issue. That means a lot to a lot of clients, and you know, that level of autonomy of your decision maker can really help.
Yeah, I can see that. Particularly the point that you made about sort of understanding business culture, I suppose. Yeah. With a judge, you just have no idea which way they might lean or how much they might know about your business and the industry in which you're working. So I can see that being really compelling. Yeah. for parties.
Yeah, I think so.
And we talked a little at the start about confidentiality and how arbitration is sort of, as a general rule, sort of as more confidential. Can you give any examples as to, you know, in real life why that might really matter?
Yeah, I mean, look, in a commercial dispute, you know, disputes arising out of a joint venture agreement or an SPA or things of that nature, there will be information that is sensitive, right? That's commercially sensitive. I've been on a case where, you know, the counterparties sought information around profit margins, and, you know, negotiations with suppliers, and even the design of equipment, you know, which, you know, our client sit there saying, well, if that's disclosed, you know, in this case, it was only to the counterparty in an arbitration, but imagine if it was disclosed more generally, that could be, you know, that could be really difficult from a business. I don't want people knowing my profit margins the design of my equipment. That's those are the crown jewels. It would affect my competitive advantage.
Absolutely.
You know, some clients would think. So going into a dispute, when you're carving up your dispute resolution clause, it is my experience that clients do care, generally speaking, they do care about the confidentiality of their documents, of the subject matter of the dispute. And look, in arbitration, depends on your seat, right? I'll put that caveat out there. But if you're London seated, and even if you're using certain institutional rules, you can expect your arbitration to be confidential, and you can expect your hearings to be private.
And then, so you've made a very compelling case for arbitration. You should perhaps declare your interest in arbitration. But
well, yes,
but that, you know, so why might parties actually still stick to, you know, a traditional court system then in their documents?
There can be situations where parties don't necessarily need the confidentiality of an arbitration. I will say that. In fact, they might see some leverage in a disagreement with their counterparty, depending on the nature of the counterparty, being in the public domain. That can be seen as in some situations as a point of leverage. I think if I'm being fair, I wouldn't say arbitration is necessarily any cheaper. Mm-hmm. than a court case. I mean, we'll come on to the sort of appeal process in a moment where you can save costs in arbitration, but in terms of the general running of an arbitration versus a court case, I wouldn't say arbitration is necessarily cheaper. In fact, you
or
know,
shorter
or shorter actually. You know, you'll have to pay for the arbitrators, for example. You'll have to pay for arbitration venue. You wouldn't have to do that in a court case. And look, I think there is still a view that, you know, in court cases, certainly in England, you can seek in certain instances summary judgment, right, where you can get a decision pretty quickly. Whereas in arbitration, I think, look, institutions are working hard to rectify that by putting in place early determination processes, for example. The LCI have done that. But, you know, it can depend on the institution. And if you're ad hoc, you don't have that necessarily available to you. You may have to go through the whole process of setting up your tribunal and going through your submissions and your disclosure and your witness evidence and your expert reports, and it takes too long.
Right. And then another thing, you know, obviously in arbitration that is a decision that needs to be made is when you're drafting your contract is the seat of the arbitration. Do you mind just sort of setting out what that really means and why it matters?
Yeah, the seat of the arbitration sets the legal framework for the arbitration. Right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are the rules that are going to govern the challenge of the award? You know, what are the rules that are going to govern when you can displace an arbitrator, for example? Where do you look? Right, you look at the law of the seat for that. So really what you're looking for there is a seat that is highly sophisticated in arbitration, if you've chosen an arbitration as your method of dispute resolution. You know, a seat that has seen these issues before, that has a body of jurisprudence on the issues that come up in the course of an arbitration. So, you know, trying to find a seat that has that jurisprudence, perhaps is pro-arbitration, it's not too interventionist, is really what you're looking for. And, you know, we're based in London, aren't we? So we're naturally going to say, I'm naturally going to say London, what a fantastic seat of arbitration. But look, there are other seats as well that are very popular and very sophisticated.
And have you seen any changes, sort of market changes in that respect over the past few years?
Yeah, no, I think there have been. And, you know, I think certain seats of arbitration have done very well in terms of showing their ability to, you know, to manage and handle arbitrations. And I'm thinking in particular Singapore, has developed into a fantastic seat of arbitration, and certainly you can see that in the surveys and the rankings. It's a very popular choice now.
And maybe just give maybe even just some hypothetical examples of where getting your seat wrong, or not thinking too carefully about it, how might that play out quite badly in practice?
Arbitration awards, as a general rule, are final.
Yeah.
Right, in the sense where that's it, that's our decision, we move on with life. Aligned with that, you really want a seat that will respect an arbitration decision and won't be too
arbitration friendly.
Right, won't be too interventionist. You will get some jurisdictions that will apply a liberal approach to reinterrogating the issues in an arbitration award, and then deciding, right, okay, well, would I, a judge in this country, have come to the same conclusion, or would I come to a different conclusion? I think it would have come to a different conclusion.
Very interesting.
So there you've got, you know, a slight issue, because you've got a pretty interventionist court system in an arbitration unfriendly jurisdiction, and you've completely countermanded the choice the parties made, which was to go to arbitration.
So I think probably, Sachin, it's time to wrap up there and talk about key takeaways. So what I'm really hearing from this is, well, we can keep it brief, can't we? When you are looking at your documents, whether it's SPAs, JVAs, or actually just your commercial agreements that you're entering into as a business as usual, choose your jurisdiction clause, choose arbitration or litigation intentionally.
Do the disputes that are going to come up in this agreement, what do they more naturally lend themselves towards? Do we need that neutrality? Is there that truly international element? How do we feel about confidentiality? Is that really desirable for us? You know, do we see a summary judgment point? Are we comfortable with the institutional rules that we have in place that we can get some form of accelerated justice? Enforceability, we talked a little bit about that, you know, and actually enforceability is vitally important. You know, there's no point going through a court case or an arbitration case and not being able to get your money right at the end of it. You've really got to think about that quite carefully, and then think to yourself, right, on the balance of all of that, is it arbitration? Is it high court litigation? And then you take it from there.
Makes a lot of sense. Thank you once again for your wise words, Sachin.
Thank you, Harriet.
Good to speak.
Sachin here, taking over for the last few words from Harriet while she's on maternity leave. That was the final episode of our M&A on Trial mini-series. If there are any topics you'd be interested in hearing about in a bonus episode, perhaps the pitfalls of notice clauses, W&I insurance on trial perhaps, or even how these issues play out in other jurisdictions, let us know. But goodbye for now, and thank you very much for listening.